Good morning. Today is Monday, May the 4th, 145th day of the new year. Welcome back to the morning, everybody. Joining us this morning, Eureka Police Chief, Mr. Mills.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask you how last week went, but I think I know.
Like I said, I'm a couple pounds lighter.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about body weight.
No, when you were even active over the weekend.
Yeah.
In spite of all the headlines. Boy, it's got to be fun. Our quote this morning comes from Leo Biscaglia. Don't smother each other. No one can grow in the shade. That's about as close to that shade reference as I think I want to. Yeah. Oh, boy. So you guys have been busy.
We have.
Another shipment of drugs in the area, or what's going on? I guess starting from the heroin guy on the porch.
There are certain things that continue to amaze me. You know, well, here's a guy that was released from prison on PCRS, prison realignment AB 109.
Okay,
and he got released from probation early, and now he's committing bank robberies. Has done, you know, we believe he did two of them. And then with the proceeds, evidently, purchases a great deal of heroin, ounce and a half, and has it in his pants when he's arrested as he's nodded off on a porch. One of the effects of heroin is that you go to sleep. So we arrest him, take him to jail, and it was interesting because on the way in to the station to interview him, the detectives were walking him in, and he said, "Hey, look, guys, this isn't that big of a deal." And they said, "What are you talking about? It's two bank robberies." He goes, "It's Prop 47. I said, "Well, we hate to tell you, it's not Prop 47. This is a federal offense. They don't care about Prop 47.
Oh.
Oops. I guess I don't have anything to say. Yeah.
Oh, that is kind of curious because, to me, I wouldn't think that the bad guys would be that well informed. And I know you and predecessors have said, "Oh, no, these guys know the California legal code better than our guys do. They're that dialed in." Just years of experience, or do they know kind of the catchphrases?
Well, each prison has a law library, and they communicate with one another. Now, I tell you that story anecdotally, but I don't know that it's indicative of how much Prop 47 is going to affect us or is affecting us. But certainly, there are people who view this as a free for all, and it's not.
Is it just here, Andy, or do you, when you get together with the chiefs statewide, are they running into the same phenomenon?
Yeah, this is a nationwide, or that's mostly statewide phenomena. There are some, you're seeing some interesting things happen with crime rates around the country. And, so let me address one thing. There's a website called Neighborhood Scout, which rated us as the second most dangerous, quote unquote, place in the state. That is an absolute sham. What that website is a alarm company promotion website. When people take their news from blogs, you got to really think about what kind of blog this is. So what they did is they took all the petty crime and lumped it with all the major crime to come up with this to create a level of hysteria. And now, is crime bad here, and do we need to do better with it? Absolutely. But when you say we're number two in the state, there was a recent article by the Public CEOs magazine that rated the top 10 cities in California for crime. Eureka wasn't even on the list.
Well, I guess there is some good news there.
There is good news. We're number 11.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
The best Spanish language station on the North Coast is Juan 790. Tune in to 790 AM for great music, sports from ESPN, and CNN News en Español. If you're a business owner, ask Juan to connect you with the Spanish-speaking community. You'll be glad you did. Visit Juan online at juan790.com or give us a call at 442-5744. Juan 790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Thank you. Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Andy Mills. Andy, the concept of local, state, federal law kind of all coming together. Had an opportunity to talk to a former sheriff over the weekend, and he's, you know, we were kicking around the implementation of legalization in Oregon July 1. The way that screwy laws, mm-hmm. right? The way that one is written is you could have literally 1 million pounds of dried marijuana in your barn and it's okay, as long as it doesn't go across the state line.
Right.
At the state level, the feds obviously have a different sense of perspective on that. When you're working with some of these changes that are going on, whether it's interpretations or whether it's funding or whether it's just new laws coming, edicts from the state, how do you mesh the two together if you have conflicting interpretations?
Well, it's difficult. I sit on the Cal Chiefs board for the state, and I'm a representative from our region, and so I'm able to have input on policy and law that's coming down the pike. Now, here's where the problem is. The federal government has we're not going to enforce marijuana policy, and the state has, you know, Prop 215 already in place and obviously is marching towards 2016, where it's probably going to be legalized recreationally, if you agree with the polling. So there's this gigantic conflict. And to me, it's the hypocritical side of the federal government to say we're not going to enforce this and by de facto make it legalized. But we're not going to give you permission to move it interstate because then you're crossing the state line.
Don't get on the airplane, though.
Yeah, don't get on the airplane with it or even drive across the state line. So it's really tough. But here's my concern. We're in a dire situation with water here in our state. Marijuana is a very intensive water plant, not to mention the deregulation that has happened with people growing on their own, and we've just stuck our heads in the sand on this thing. And so if they're going to pass that law and use, you know, have these plants suck up 10 gallons of water per plant, then I think they need to be really thoughtful about how they do it, like maybe make Humboldt the only place you can lawfully do it since we have an abundance of water.
Somebody had an interesting little twist on that. You know, with the permits and all that, and I forget if it was being talked about or if it's in place in certain jurisdictions. You can only grow indoor. That's it. You know, nobody has a well in their house.
Right.
Okay. Everything has to be indoor. No outdoor grows. And then all of a sudden, the regulation element's in place. The water consumption is measured out. They're at least paying for the water, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't clarify if it's legal to go from California to Oregon, since both would be legal,
right,
versus Nevada. But at least it kind of gets everybody on the table,
yeah,
and you are able to start tracking. Is marijuana the only area where there is a conflict in interpretation of law, or are there other areas, and we just hear more about marijuana because that seems to be the topic du jour?
Well, anytime you get different jurisdictions, state, county, city, federal government, you're always going to get different. The laws written a little bit differently, and so it does create a conflict of who's supremacy over what law and whatnot. So there are some, but it's manageable by and large. I think, though, that with the marijuana, what my concern is that if you get these gigantic growers happening in the Central Valley where it's 100 degrees, evaporating all that water, it's going to be put our state even in a worse spot. With water, right?
Well, I know they've been talking about the almond groves.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that is a biggie. The ag community isn't one that's under the same edict at this point. They're being asked to rather than legally required to. Yeah, it seems like two different playing fields.
There are two different playing fields.
Hmm. What's your biggest concern? That the state's going to have interpretation on this, beat it to the punch, or step back like it did with 215 and just say handle it?
You know, it's interesting because, and I've told the story before and I've been roundly beat up for it, you know, is the, you know, I remember talking to some kid and, you know, he has a pound of marijuana and a gun. And so I'm talking to this kid. The gun was stored legally in the car so he could carry it that way. And the pound of marijuana was in a different part of the car, so there's not much we could do with it. And I said, oh, is this your recreational use marijuana? He goes, yes, it is. I said, well, it's your 215 card. So whips it out and hands it to me and says the doctor's name on it. And now here's a 24-year-old kid in better health than I am. Hand the card back and said, so what's your malady? Well, I've got asthma. Let me get this straight. A doctor prescribed smoking marijuana for your asthma? I said, yes. Okay, well, that's just a farce then. Yeah, no, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, common sense to me.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. I mean, that's just too good.
Yeah.
So what do people take exception on? The fact that you're telling the story?
Oh, yeah, no, that, well, I'm a doctor. How maybe smoking marijuana does help with asthma. It could. I'm not a doctor, but it just doesn't seem to make
sense. Yeah, Grandma was
to
told
me.
Not to smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, hey, maybe things have changed over the last little bit.
Well, inhaling things into your lungs in general doesn't seem to be a good thing to me.
Yeah, it was helping me cure my pneumonia.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Jeez. So this is not abnormal. It's just highlighted because it happens so regularly.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more intense right now. It's going to get more intense going towards 2016 until there's legalization. I just really hope the state is thoughtful, does this in the right way, makes sure that the measures are put in place and eliminates the black market. Because if the statistics are correct, and I don't believe that they necessarily are, that marijuana is a $4 billion a year industry in the northern region here, that becomes $320 million in tax revenue?
It's $830.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Eureka Police Chief Andy Mills. Andy, obviously the biggest thing that happened last week, other than catching the bad guys, if mm-hmm. you happen to be one of the bad guys,
yeah.
was the budget and the publication, I guess, or the community awareness of the figure and what was going on. I guess before I comment, how about your comments?
But I was kind of holding back for that.
Okay, my turn.
No, I'd be happy to.
My quickie is, this didn't seem like it was a surprise. It was not new information. All of a sudden it's here. But we wait until 7-8 weeks before the new fiscal year kicks in before you drop it on the department heads. That, oh, by the way, guys, the timing and communication were the two issues that I saw as much as the whole.
Yeah, I guess I don't see it that way.
Well, you're dealing in the hole.
Yeah, I'm the one in the hole. Yeah. It's like a rabbit hole. I think that we were aware that there was it was going to be a tight budget. We were aware that there were some issues with the budget, but I don't think at this severity. So when you get basically a bill from the Department of Finance saying, hey, you're going to have to cut $1 million too, and, drop my jaw on the ground and said, okay, we have to figure this out. So what we did is I worked with the finance group and as well as the other departments, went over every single number and challenged each one and said, okay, why am I paying this much for this type of service from the rest of the city, like, for instance, vehicles and computers and healthcare, and went over everything.
So a lot of it was like interdepartmental charges?
Yes. Yeah. And so, for instance, in order to fund other parts of the city, human resources, they don't have any revenue streams. So it comes out of, some of that comes out of our budgets. And now if either they're over there or they're over here, and I actually think it's a good way of doing that so that multiple departments are sharing the cost of that particular department. And rather than having each of us having our own human resource person, it's all centralized so that we can all have use that resource. So instead of five people in human resources, you have
everybody
three. Everybody's using the same resource. So, and I don't mind, you know, obviously doing our share to make sure that we're doing this the best way possible. So when I get that bill, we sat down, went over all those numbers, and we were able to get it reduced because the other department heads and Greg were willing to work with me on that and to say, okay, let's make sure this is as fine-tuned as we can get. And we're still working on that, but we were able to reduce it from $1,000,002 to $834,000.
Okay, so if we take that as a percentage, roughly 25%?
Roughly 20%
of what? Of everybody's number that got thrown?
Right.
Was funny? Or off?
No.
Or not tracked closely?
No, it was trackless. I think the issue was I was challenging the numbers and willing to make sacrifices on my part. For instance, I'm not going to buy new vehicles for another year for our fleet. We'll drive the older ones. And push that, you know, kick that can down a little bit so I can not have to lay off additional people. And so...
So more of an acquisition schedule in that situation.
That's correct. So anything that we could do to move those numbers around to make it so that it's a less of an impact on public safety is what I did.
But that sets it up for next year.
Sets
or are
up
you trying to just buy time right now?
I'm just trying to buy time.
Okay.
And we haven't, and I looked at our fleet. I said, okay, there's, you know, we're going to be okay for the next year with these vehicles, and we'll just, you know, take that out of the budget right now. We're grinding every penny I can.
So it wasn't a communication issue then, or it was just the degree of what was being shared?
Yeah, I don't think it was a communication issue. I think it was the degree. It was the severity that, we cut $1,000,000 last year, and then to come back and ask for additional cuts after Measure Q got passed, I was a little bit flabbergasted at that.
Now, one of the things, as I recall, you said you had been allocated X number of bods,
right,
for the department. Obviously, you're not going to be able to use that number. Is everybody full now? We're all, because I thought you got really close to having everything that you wanted. You were kind of teed up and ready to go attack the world.
In a sensitive way, though.
Yeah. That touchy-feely way only you can do.
Yeah.
And then this comes through. Does that mean you're going to have your department is being restricted? You're going to have a bunch of unfilled positions. How does this
work?
One pencil through?
Yeah, we were pretty close to being fully staffed. Now it's always in a little bit of flux because you have somebody retire or you just don't get these. We had two positions that were frozen and had five retire over the last year. Three. Several.
So there's
retirement. So there's a normal churn, and we were working on making sure those were filled. So there's two classifications in our department: sworn and civilian. Now civilian covers dispatchers and records clerks and people working in the property room, and then a large group called the PSOs, the public service officers.
Meter maid is an example.
No, they handle minor police reports. They do traffic direction at traffic accidents and also take traffic accident reports. They are the ones who might come to your house and pick up a syringe. So there's a variety of things that they do. So, and they're a very vital function for the police department, but they handle kind of the lower end stuff that's more of a service, and that's why I call them public service officers. Those classifications, I'm going through the department, taking a look at those and saying, okay, which ones can I eliminate to meet my numbers, to meet that 834,000? So they don't get it just by cutting that position. They don't get me to 834. And the MOU is that I have to cut all the annuitants. People that have already retired come back to help us, but they can only work up to a half of a year, 960 hours. They give us a gigantic bang for our buck. I mean, they work their tails off. So I have to lay them off first and then lay the annuitants off, and that brings me to about $834,000. There's a couple other things thrown in, but by and large.
So you got there.
I got there.
But you're not smiling.
It hurts. I know that the public wants and deserves the best response that they can get, but I don't believe this will affect our ability to respond to emergency calls for service. It may take longer for us to get to the nominal reports or have them take it over the computer, which the sheriffs are currently doing. Or we may not come to minor collisions where there's no injuries and you can just exchange names because it's an insurance company deal anyway. So there's a few things that we can do to, it'll be an impact, it'll be a different way of doing things, but I honestly believe that public safety won't suffer as a result, and that's my key element.
KINS, News and Information Times, 843. We'll be back with more from Andy Mills.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to talk shop this afternoon. Man, I almost
this afternoon.
Morning.
Yeah.
With Andy Mills. Andy, it's interesting, I think, some of the different challenges that are going on out there legislatively. Obviously, there's been a lot of news coverage about cops shooting.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only ones we tend to hear about are white cops shooting black people. Because you hear white on white, black on black, those don't make the radar screen. Have you changed your policies here at all in the last, 6 to 9 months? Because it would seem like those who are looking for reasons to come after cops, we have a history of that here also. Is it causing anything to be done different here, or is it just kind of a reminder for everybody, pay attention, follow the rules, do what you're supposed to do in the manner you're supposed to do it in?
Yeah, this is a very nuanced thought process that takes place with use of force. In fact, last night I had dinner with a guy that used to work for me at San Diego PD. He's now an assistant U.S. attorney for the Northern District of California here in Humboldt. He's at this courthouse. Brilliant guy. And we had this very long discussion about use of force. And even my wife, who is as pro-law enforcement as they get, why can't you... Do you have to shoot somebody, with this and both Will and I are, almost attacking her going, yeah, you can't, I'm not going to take the risk because some guy gets polluted and grabs a weapon. I'm not going to take the risk that is unreasonable to save this guy's life. I've been in a lot of situations over the 34 years I've been a cop that have been very violent and have been very dangerous to me. I mean, I've been injured 4 or 5 times, broken bones, had my head opened up, I've got stabbed in the back. I'm willing to take risk, but it shouldn't be unreasonable risk. But here's what we are doing. We're in the process of de-escalation training. We're going to do everything we can possibly do not to have to shoot people. And so when you see the orange shotguns come out of the car, those are called extended range impact weapons. So we can reach out and hit somebody from 20 yards away with a beanbag round. We use tasers. We're in the process of buying all new tasers. So we're spending a lot of money, time, and effort to make sure that we're doing everything we can do to talk people down, to slow things down so we don't respond so quickly. I think that can and will save lives. But at the same time, the officers have to be held to a standard that's up there.
I know Frank wouldn't say it in Eureka, but if your mayor said what the Baltimore mayor did, would you comply?
Stand down?
Stand down, get back, let it happen. Looting, they have to have some venting.
No, we're not going to allow looting.
Somehow, I sense that.
Yeah, I consider it an act of violence, and you can't allow that. We should have learned the lessons from LAPD and with Rodney King.
Thanks for coming by.
You bet, man.
I hope this week's easier for you. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, hug someone, you'll see you tomorrow.